It's a meat, which is amazing. Amazing mice. Anyway, although in general, the purpose of this course is to explore different shitas, but memela, to understand the background of these different shitas, you need to know the history of the people and the institutions. And spending some time on Volozhin is a very, very important inyan, because we're going to see tonight not only the godless of Volozhin and the fact that it really was the yesod of all the great yeshivas of Eastern Europe, but we'll also see the problems of Volozhin, a lot of which gave rise to the Musar movement. So the whole yesod of Volozhin was to try to be Masakin. In fact, one might even say, in retrospect, that maybe there was a hashgacha pratis, or, I don't know, it's not for me to say, in the closing of Volozhin, because it was Geirim, the spreading of Torah in many, many maestas, and there were tikkunim in those maestas that represented certain chesreinus in Volozhin. So you never know what it is. Of course, in a sense, you know, I have to say, numbers can no longer impress me after Mir. You know, the people, all the contemporary accounts said, what a gavoda gamakam Torah, 500 people steiging away, yaimam v'layla. But you know what can I say? I mean, the numbers kind of don't impress us anymore. So I think we have to look at the maybe the echos more than the kamos. That fort Volozhin was still Volozhin, even though it was only 10% or less than 10% of what Mir became, huh? In terms of the ratios of population.
Yeah,
it's shayach. It's shayach. Interesting, just. Derech Agav, of nothing other than the fact that we're still within the Avelis of the Rosh Hashiva. I just read that Rosh was giving a description of his first day in Mir. He came as a Chicago kid, and he was staying at his great uncle of Lazy Yehuda Finkel, who was the son of the Altar of Slobodka. And he comes off the train wearing comes off the plane wearing a baseball cap, Yishleim, and, you know, he thought, you know, he was a great uncle, a friend, he was gonna, like, learn a little bit, like, you know, learn an hour of Gemara a day or something. So he goes to Lazy Yud after a 24-hour trip, basically. And he says, Shalom Aleichem, good to see you. And Lazy Yud says, Nu, this is like a high school senior. Do you have a Kiddush to tell me? He says, well, I thought maybe after supper we could learn a little bit. He says, no, you tell me your Kiddush now. He says, well, I don't have any Kiddush in particular. He says, so go to the Beis Medrash, and when you come up with some Kiddush you want to tell me, come back. So he's exhausted, and he's really not into Kiddush mode anyway, just an American high school kid. So he sits for half an hour, he can't come up with anything. He goes to Lev Leir and says, you know, maybe we can have supper first or something. He says, no, you go back for the Kiddush. So he goes back like two or three times. So he finally comes up with some little, I don't know what it was, but he himself, the Rashiv himself said it wasn't such a great, some little thing about why Rashi said this word instead of that word. And Lev Leir kissed him and says, welcome to Mir, let's have supper. You know, so he says that he wanted to show him that, you know, you can't eat until you come up with some Kiddush. Now, one thing I know about Lazy Yehuda in particular, Lazy Yehuda was very, very makbid that everybody come up with their Chidushim. In fact, at one point, he was complaining that his brain was overloaded with, he says, he's heard 250 Chaburas on Yiyah Shalom Midas. He says his brain is bursting out. He says, like everybody told him, like he memorized, like everybody's Chabur, everybody's Shtikl Torah. And they're like, okay. Anyway, we were talking about Volozhin, and particularly the relationship of the Nitziv and Rav Chaim. We talked about the closing of Volozhin. The Nitziv, who wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael after Volozhin was closed, but essentially he died. You say he died of old age, he died of heartbreak. The Nitziv was very, very tzibrachin, and he died very shortly afterwards. Rav Chaim, however, did live for around another 20 years. His father, the Beis Halevi, was Nifter very shortly after the closing of Volozhin. So, Kimat, as soon as Volozhin was closed, Rav Chaim succeeded his father as Mamala Makam in Brisk. And he was the Rav of Brisk for around 20 years, and then Rav Chaim was Nifter. One has to recognize that Rav Chaim in his time, which was a Dor Deya, a Dor of many, many great Gedalim, Rav Chaim was considered by many to be the great Gadol Hador. Now, it's not for us to rank, but the general ranking, again, it's not within our Hasaga, but the way they rank him is they consider Rav Chaim a number one, and Rav Meir Simcha, the Or Sameach, was number two, and then everybody else, you know, came afterwards. And that was the kind of the ranking that was Nemdan at that point. Because it was not only Godless and Torah, it was Hanhaga of the Klal, it was the Hashkafa of the door. It wasn't just sitting and learning. In fact, Rav Chaim was not a Rosh Hashiva after he left the Lashon. Rav Chaim was a Rav. Now, it's interesting. We have tremendous zichreinus of Rav Chaim as a Rosh Hashiva. The Torah Tamima writes about it, and my uncle, the Nitziv. The Nitziv's Ben Zakunin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, writes about it. He was 12 years old when the Lashon was closed, but it's amazing. He seemed to have been extremely close to Rav Chaim. It's interesting that just the way, at least the way he describes it. And he and the Torah Tamima both describe Rav Chaim as not just an Eloi and a tremendous Amkin as a young Rosh Hashiva, but as somebody who the Bachurim felt was their brother. I mean, they schmoozed with him, they joked with him, you know, all sorts of things that I mentioned last week. The Nitziv even had a little joke that Rav Chaim was schmoozing too much with the guys. He says, Rav Chaim b'tzavarei v'yasek b'tayra, and the like. Now, Rav Meir Bar Ilan knew, Rav Meir Berlin, we'll call him then, he knew Rav Chaim after he became the Rav in Brisk as well, in fact. You know, this is after Vlashen. And he said, and I can hear this, that anybody who knew Rav Chaim from the Vlashener days saw that Rav Chaim's personality was totally different. He says, Vlashen, he was so besimcha, so lebedik, so happy. This is like it was his natural place. And in Brisk, it wasn't his natural place. To be a Rav was not his natural place. He had to deal with Kehilas. He had to deal with non-religious people. He had to deal with the Zionists. He had to deal with the communists. He had to deal with Kasherus, which can really wear a person down a lot. And Rav Chaim, you know, it's needless to say, was a very, very responsible Rav, Mara Diyasra, and he didn't delegate to other people. And he says Rav Chaim kind of had this air of depression. Now, this is Rav Meir Bar Ilan's own personal thing, you know, who knows? But he says Rav Chaim was the fish out of water. The Lashon had been his water, and in Brisk, he didn't have a yeshiva, really. He didn't have a yeshiva. Now, what happened was, many Talmidim from other yeshivas would go to Rav Chaim to learn a little bit, just like they did with the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav also didn't have a yeshiva, but no, they would go. But Rav Chaim himself did not have a yeshiva in those 18 years, or 18 to 20, 20 years, and he said that it really was... It was Tzibrachin. Rav Chaim was also Tzibrachin, but he kept going and he was very involved. As I say, he was considered by many to be the Gadol Hador, Mamish the Gadol Hador, in all of these inyanim. Again, not just in learning, but in Hanhaga, in Shita, in how to deal with the Russian government and different inyanim. He was just tremendous, and people were always excited. There was one, Rav Chaim had one Talmud in Volozhin, who was, he went off the derech, and he went to learn physics with Einstein. I'm not sure if that meant he really went off the derech, or the only way in which he went off the derech is he went to study physics with Einstein. I'm not sure what they were saying. But he came back to Volozhin for a visit. This is before Volozhin closed down. And everybody wanted to know, the one question everybody wanted to know was, who's smarter, Rav Chaim or Einstein? They wanted to know. And, you know, they discussed it, Stadim, Mikan, Umikan, you know, etc. But that's what it is, because Rav Chaim was mamish a shem dover. I mean, the amkus, and it was just like a totally unique type of thing. And again, just to give you a list of who were Rav Chaim's Talmidim in Volozhin. Who were the Talmidim? Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, Rav Shimon Shkup, Rav Baruch Ber, Rav Ochanan Wasserman. These were the Talmidim from Volozhin who became the great Rashi Yeshiva of the next door. So so Mamela, and then you look at who their Talmidim were, right? So you see that basically the whole yeshiva world, at least the whole Litvish yeshiva world, really comes down to the hashbav of Rav Chaim, the Meitzer Ila, you know, etc. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav, obviously were also Talmidim. By the way, they say the following. They say, there's an old joke they say about how the Talmidim not only learned from Rav Chaim, but they mamish, he was almost like a Hasidish Rebbe. I mean, they mamish were mevatel themselves to Rav Chaim. So they want to say the difference. I have a joke here that I saw that's brought down in Maisa books, Rav Shach brings it, between the Brisker Rav, Rav Shimon, and Rav Baruch Ber in their hispatlus to Rav Chaim. So the joke goes, let's say Rav Chaim said, this table is a cow. He made such a statement, which makes no sense. So the Brisker Rav would touch it up. That means the table has the same halacha as a cow, whatever that would mean. In other words, the halachic yisaitis of a cow apply to a table. Rav Shimon would say, the molecular structure of the cow can be rearranged to be that of a table. Memela, its mahus is the same. Rav Baruch Ber would try to milk the table. And and at least I get the last thing at least. I'm not sure I get the first two, but the last thing is very, very emes. Of all of the great Talmidim of Rav Chaim, Rav Baruch Ber was the most mevatel himself to Rav Chaim. I heard Rav Pindra said, I wasn't there, but I heard in the Hespit for Nesan Tzvi, he quoted Rav Chaim Shmulevitz once saying that the reason why the yeshivish world people aren't so gedolim as they were in Europe is because they never saw Rav Baruch Ber learning for 5 minutes. And we'll talk more about Rav Baruch Ber, but you have to know one thing about Rav Baruch Ber, who became a great Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Baruch Ber was a Meshunah Dike Eloi before he came to Volozhin. But when he came to Volozhin and he absorbed Rav Chaim's derech, he was totally mevato his whole derech of limud. He had notebooks of chidushim, he burnt it all. He says he didn't want any chidushim that were not alpi the derech of Rav Chaim. And he was mevatel himself to Rav Chaim's derech. If you ever look at the Bircha Shmuel, which is Rav Baruch Ber's sefer, very, very hard sefer, you'll see, number one, he'll often give a whole shir on 5 words of Rav Chaim. And by the way, when he describes Rav Chaim, that takes up 3 lines. It says, "Vishamati mimei v'rabbi rabbeinu v'me'agayla hagayin achasid," you know, "Moreinu v'rabbeinu hagayin Rav Chaim Halevi zecher tzadik levracha l'chai olam haba." So that'll be 3 lines, and it'll say something like, you know, "The kinyan is ma'akif." That's all. Ad kan l'shono hatohar v'akodesh. Then Rav Baruch Ber will go 5 pages to be masbir the pnimius of Rav Chaim's machshava. Now, I saw B'Shem Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky something that I would never in a million years have the chutzpah to say. But I'll say it B'Shem Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky felt that maybe there was a shtickl chisarin. He says a person shouldn't have been mevatel himself ad kedei kach. He said Rav Baruch Ber was a meshunadik goyim, but he would have been a bigger goyim had he allowed his own derech to come through, as did Rav Isser Zalman. It's a big nafkamina. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, who was Rav Aaron Cutler's father-in-law, and who came to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Isser Zalman was also a Talmud, Mufik of Rav Chaim. Talmud Mufik of Rav Chaim. But Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer was not always makabel every derech of Rav Chaim. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer held that sometimes you don't have to be miyashiv a Rambam through lumdus. Sometimes you miyashiv a Rambam through a cheshbon of a sugya, or just going through the pshat in the Gemara, and not everything has to be like an amkus deep type of thing. And Rav Isser Zalman was independent. Now Rav Chaim once said, it's interesting, Rav Chaim said the opposite of Rav Yaakov. Rav Chaim once said about Rav Isser Zalman, he could really be a goyin if he'd follow my derech more. He says, but Nebuch, he says, Rav Isser Zalman is so meshubit to emes, that if it's not emes to him, he can't be makabel. Rav Baruch Ber was exactly that. Rav Baruch Ber was mevatel any of his own hasagas to his Rebbe. Tremendous thing. And so this last line, he would try to milk the table, has a lot of emes in terms of the ispatlus of Rav Baruch Ber to Rav Chaim, which was different than Rav Isser Zalman, different than Rav Lachanan. Now even the Chazen Ish never learned in any yeshiva, but the Chazen Ish went to Brisk as a young man. He may not, maybe even before his chasna, because he wanted to learn from Rav Chaim. And the Chazon Ish left after a few months. So they make up Meisim that he couldn't find Yashan in Brisk. Whatever, that's above a Meisim. I mean, obviously he left Brisk because that derech was not his derech. And in fact, you know, the Chazon Ish wrote Ha'oris on Rav Chaim al Rambam, in which he's often Chalek on Rav Chaim. The Chazon Ish had a different derech. That was it. It wasn't for him. Now, even that's more time than Rav Yashiv spent. Rav Yashiv learned in yeshiva like exactly 1 week. Rav Yashiv went to Hebron when it wasn't Hebron, I think. He went to Hebron before the massacre in the 20s to learn for a week, but yeshiva wasn't for him. He wanted to learn more b'yachidus his whole life. Okay, but be it as it may, Rav Chaim had a tremendous, tremendous hashpah, and he was also, as a Rav, he was very, very beloved by the Balabatim. It's interesting that in the early 1900s, there were a lot of Yiddish newspapers. Some of them were from, some of them were Maskila, but a lot of Yiddish papers people were reading. So a Yiddish paper wanted to run a series of interviews with famous rabbis, Orthodox rabbis. So they interviewed the Aruch HaShulchan, they interviewed Rav Chaim, they interviewed a number of the great Rabbanim. And each of them had to answer the question, what is the most important tafkit of a Rav? So the Aruch HaShulchan, as you might expect, said the most important tafkit of a Rav is to answer shaylas, the paskin halacha, to be a person who's a baki, the dalet chalkei shulchan aruch, to be able to answer all shaylas, which is what the Aruch HaShulchan taka is. Others said the ikar of a rav is to stand up against lack of tznias and pritzas geder. And another rav said it's to be oimed on kashrus, which is, you know, had problems then like now. Rav Chaim said that the ikar tachlis of the rav is lahatzil ha'oshuk miyad oishkei. That means to protect oppressed people who are oppressed. In other words, to protect the poor and the yasam and the almana, and to stand up for people. I mean, it's mamashti, like Rav Chaim was a social activist, so to speak. Rav Chaim basically said to have rachmanis for those who have difficulties. If you had to do a match game, match up response to rabbi, you wouldn't automatically assume that's where Rav Chaim goes. But the Emes is, that's what he was. And in fact, during his 18 or 20 years in Brisk, his house was Hefker. When women were Mazana, strangely enough, or women couldn't take care of their children, they would leave, these are Shtukis and Asufis, these are Sufik Mamzerim, Shtukis and Asufis. They would leave their kids in Rav Chaim's house. And he and his Rebbetzin raised them. Raised abandoned children. The house was Hefker. The Brisker Rav says, as a child, he remembers many times coming home, and Aniyim were sleeping in his bed. He didn't have a bed to sleep in. His father's Svarim were all over the place. Everybody was just walking into the house and taking Svarim. And he says, one time, Rav Chaim needed a Gemara, and he told the Brisker Rav, probably somebody took it into the shul. Just go to the shul and bring back menachas. So he goes to a guy who's learning Rav Chaim's Gemara menachas, and the guy tells the Brisker Rav, tell your father he could borrow the Gemara from somebody else. I'm using it right now. You know, things like that. Everything was mamish hefker. And one famous maisa that was written about in the newspapers in Eastern Europe is there was a big fire in Brisk, and all of the city got burnt down. At least the poor, again, as you'd expect, the poor houses got burnt down because they were more flimsy. They were wood instead of stone. And Rav Chaim's house was not burnt down, but he moved his bed into the street. Like the Gemara in Bava Basra about the show. He moved his bed into the street, and he said he was not going to sleep under a roof until the Kshtat builds the houses of the Aniyim. People don't realize the whole other side of Rav Chaim, the Gemilas Chayim, and the like. So, and again, even as Rosh Hashiva, he was that way in terms of the guys. But he was this way to the Shtar. Now he died in Warsaw. Why does everybody die in Warsaw? Like, why is the Nitziv? Basically, a lot of Gedolim died in Warsaw for a very simple reason. Warsaw had the best medical facilities in Poland. So when Gedolim got sick, they went to Warsaw, and if the tipple didn't work, they died in Warsaw. So in the Besak Forest in Warsaw, which is the largest Jewish cemetery in the world, next to Har HaZeisim, Rav Chaim and the Nitziv. See, the Beis HaLevi is buried in Brisk. Rav Chaim and the Nitziv are buried side by side, even though they were separated by over 20 years. So Rav Chaim and the Nitziv are together. The Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin are together in Varsha, as the pasuk says, "Hanimim v'nechmadim b'chayehem." As David and Yenison, right? They were sweet and beloved in their lifetime. Uvamaisam loynifradu, and even in their death, they are together. Now, that's Rav Chaim's Rabbanus and Brisk. And as you know, when Rav Chaim died, he was succeeded by the person that we know as the Brisker Rav, although they all were the Brisker Rav, and that's Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who was the last Rav of Brisk before the Holocaust. And after the Holocaust, he came to Eretz Yisrael, where he also was not a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He had no yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. This yeshiva's Brisk is started after he died. In fact, it's in his apartment. At least the initial one is in his apartment. But, you know, he had a share with Chaburis, he had a share, you know, where Gedaila Yerushalayim would come, Rav Shach would come, many Gedailim would come. It's interesting. he asked Rav Elyashiv to come. Rav Elyashiv was so, like, didn't want to be involved in a share or a Chabura, that, you know, people were begging the Brisker Rav to go to his share, and Brisker Rav was turning people down. I mean, you know, it's like, for every, you know, 50 people who asked, he would take one. You know, it was very, very hard to get into the Brisker Rav's share. And he asked Rav Elyashiv to come, and Rav Elyashiv said he didn't want to come. So that's a little the Briskers still like him. I don't know why. It's an interesting situation because they figured they would take it very seriously as a pagia and the like. Now, to go back a little bit, to go back when Voloshin was still open, because I'm going back and forth, I had mentioned that the Nitziv and Rav Chaim, although they were very close and loved each other, were very different, b'teva. Their derech and learning was different. The Nitziv's yisaid was primarily a gavaldik, a tremendous bekias, not just in Bavli and Yerushalmi, but in Midrashim, in Midrashei Halacha, in Tisefta, in the Lashonis of many Rishonim, in Tanakh, in Diktuk. Right? The Nitziv knew everything. As I said, Kol HaTayra Mamish, Kol HaTayra Kula. Rav Chaim focused more on the Ian and the Yamkus. Rav Chaim was not so into learning a lot of Achreinim, only, you know, Ruki Veger maybe, things like that. Although Rav Chaim had one talent, Rav Chaim had one amazing talent, and Rav Chaim was able, you could tell him one shtickel Torah from an Achrein, one shtickel Torah, and he could then tell you, okay, I'll tell you how this Achron will answer every other kasha. In other words, this was like a game he used to play, but it was an amazing game. He says, okay, there's a new sefer that came out by somebody. So he would tell someone, tell me one kasha and one teretz, this mechaber says. So you would tell Rav Chaim, okay, this mechaber asks this kasha, and this mechaber gives this teretz. So then Rav Chaim says, okay, ask me another kasha, this mechaber said. So he's asking him another kasha. Rav Chaim said, okay, this mechaber will answer this kasha this way. And he would be mechaber to it, he said. And he did this like with you know, 100 svarim, because in other words, just hearing one, his mind was so amazingly clear that he was able to understand the mahalich of a person's machshava to be able to predict everything he was going to say. Even though that wasn't Rav Chaim's derech, Rav Chaim would say, okay, Rabbi Kiveger would answer the kasha this way, and the Pnei Yeshua would answer the kasha this way, and the Ktzais, he didn't even necessarily learn all of those svarim at the time. He says, so he was, in other words, once he knew one thing, he could be machaven to everything that those svarim said. And Rav Chaim, this is like a game, Rav Chaim used to do this quite often with people, so okay. In fact, Rav Chaim had this thing that he wanted to try to figure out everything. It was almost like a little bit of a game, but he thought it was training in concentration, in Ian. Like, in fact, he would train the Brisker Rav this way. Somebody would be walking in the street. So Rav Chaim would say, why is that person walking on this side of the street? What do you think? So the Brisker Rav, as a kid, would say, I don't know, no particular reason. No, everything has a reason. And they'd have to, like, be mafalpo into, well, he's going here because there's a store here, but he lives there. So, you know, just mabakach, but he held it was like building the mind to be able to analyze different possibilities. Rav Chaim was, it was a little strange, but these were derachim of chinuch that he held in mahalchim of machshava. In fact, one time Rav Chaim couldn't figure out why the guy was going there. And Rav Chaim was actually perturbed. He says, I don't know pshat. Why is the guy going there? Rav Chaim like considered all the possibilities. So he asked the guy, he says, why are you going there? He says, I don't really know, I just started watching. Rav Chaim was right, there was no particular reason why he was going there. Rav Chaim, so even that, Rav Chaim wanted to be klar in all of those in Yanim. So it was very, very, very interesting person, Bechalal Rav Chaim. But the Nitziv, so they had a different derech in learning. They also had different interests. Rav Chaim was in the Amkus of Pshat, and the Nitziv was in the Hekif of Bekias. But I also mentioned that Rav Chaim was a much bigger kanoi against secular studies, against Zionism. The Nitziv saw a little bit of a makom for those things. Rav Chaim was totally against the Chachmas Chitzainiyas, the Netziv was willing to put them in. Right? These were different chilukim. Maskilim, Rav Chaim considered our Rishoyim that we'll all go to Gehenim. The Netziv was at least willing to have a Shaychas. I had mentioned that Maskilim often came to the Netziv with issues of Diktuk and Tanakh and the like, and Rav Chaim would like not for emfer the kashas of people who were not B'nai Torah. And the Netziv would address it. So I want to tell you a famous word from the Netziv, although some say B'Shem Rav Chaim V'Lashner, but I think it's from the Shem the Netziv. A maskil was once very nispoil that the Netziv could forever some diktuk in the Eben Ezra, some amazing thing that, you know. So the maskil said like this, he says, I don't understand. We spend all of our days, all we learn is the diktuk and nach, and we can't figure this out. And you spend your whole day, basically, with Gemara, Rishayim, Halacha, and, you know, when do you learn Nach? You know, Bein Astarim. So how do you come up? How do you have such a deep understanding of this when you put such little time into it? So the Netziv says, Shteiten Eish Yischayel. Right? Eish Yischayel. Now, Eish Yischayel, according to the Medrash, is actually a shir about the Torah. The Eish Yischayel Miyimtza is the Torah Hashem. So it says, Sodin Asasa Vatimkor. She makes a blanket, and she sells it. The chagor and the belt, nosna laknani, she gives to the Canaanite. Now, Canaanite there means a merchant. Canaanim were sochrim, so sometimes in Nach, a Canaani means a seifer. So you see there's a stira. It says vatimkor, she sells, and then it says nosna, she gives away. So the Netziv says, the pshat in the pasuk says, I'll give you a mashal. Let's say there's a person, a poor person, who wants to buy some sechaira to make a profit in the big fairs, but he doesn't have any money. He can't, right? He can't buy any merchandise to sell at a profit because he pasha doesn't have any money. So he notices somebody walks into the store and buys a lot of merchandise and then gets free gift wrapping. The gift wrapping is for free. So he says, how much does that wrapping cost? He says, the gift wrapping is for free. So the person now has a wonderful idea. He walks in, he takes a bunch of gift wrapping and starts walking out of the store. So the chevron says, wait a second, you gotta pay whatever it is, you gotta pay 20 rubles for gift wrapping. So he says, what do you mean? Why do I have to pay 20 rubles for gift wrapping? The guy before me got gift wrapping for free. He says, no. When you buy sechaira, you get the wrapping for free. If all you want is the wrapping, you gotta pay for it. That's the pasuk, right? Sadin asasava timkor. When you buy the sadin, when you buy the blanket, chagor nasna, the belt, the wrapping, you get for free. What's the dimming to the Torah? So he says like this. He says, the ikar of Torah is vadai shasin paiskin. But when you invest your time and your kaichas in the ikar, the Eibishter gives you the wrapping for free. The wrapping would be the Tanakh, the parparais. But if all you want is the wrapping, you gotta pay for it. So Mamela, you guys, he says to the Maskilim, who don't learn Gemara, are not Isaac and Halacha, you just want to learn Tanakh and Dikta, you gotta pay, you gotta work, you gotta do hours and hours and hours and hours. But those who buy the Sechaira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them the wrapping, B'matana. He says, that's why it's Shachar. So it says very, very nice word about, right? Sodin Asas of Atimkar, when she sells through your Yagiyah, right? That's the price you pay. When she sells you the Iker Sechaira, Chagor Nosna, she throws in the Chagura as a Matana. That's a famous word from the Netziv. Now, I'll tell you a Maisa. Since a lot of you guys saw Malicha today, I'll tell you a Maisa. It's a little Lumdisha. So this is actually Lumdus. So for this year, Mukhayif to say Bircha Sateira. That is, Rav Chaim had a particular unusual Mida. Rav Chaim was the Rav of Brisk. But Rav Chaim hated the Paskin Shailas. He hated the Paskin Shailas. He had great Dayanim. Rav Simcha Zela Grigor was a great Gadol B'Torah, has a Talmud of his in Volozhin. And all of the Shailas went to the Dayanim. Rav Chaim did not want to Paskin anything. He didn't want to. Very strange for a Rav. And in fact, when he went on trips, he asked his Dayan to go with him in case anybody asks him a Shaila, you know, he would have the Dayan Paskin. Why Rav Chaim was so reluctant to Paskin is a little bit of a mystery. Probably it's because the derech of a paisek is a little different. The derech of a paisek is very much meshubit to what the other paiskim say, etc. And Rav Chaim had his own unique amkus, his own unique derech, and sometimes he would come up with maskanas that were keneged hamakubal. So memela, he did not want to be involved in psak. When there was a shaila that went beyond even his local shtetl, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector was the paisek hador, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, and the Velt says a famous story. I'm not sure if it's true. These are stories people say that when Rav Chaim used to send shaila to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, he used to say, "Give me a psak and don't give me the reason. Just tell me yes, no, usher, mutter, kusher, treif. I'll do whatever you say. Don't give me the reasons." Because the pshat is, if you give me the reasons, I might be chaylek on them. But even if your reasons are wrong, you have siyata dishmaya to be mechaven el ba'emes, because you're the paisek hador. So he says, the reasons are going to confuse me. If you give me a reason that I think is krum, I won't be able to follow your psak. Even though I know, that's an amazing thought. In other words, there is a yachid in every door who is the paisek hador. And even if he comes up with svaris that, let's say, we don't hear, not only we don't hear, even if a gadol doesn't hear it, but nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives that paisek, the siyata nishmaya, to be mechaveng el emes. So anyway, Rav Chaim is once sitting at a chasna with somebody, and there was like a chassidish rebbe that was criticizing the brisker derech. So, brisk, you know, you have Ian and chakiris. What about halacha lemaisa? What about halacha lemaisa? How come the guys don't know halacha lemaisa? And he kept on saying this, and, you know, Rav Chaim at first didn't respond. But at some point, Rav Chaim got a little upset that he keeps on saying that the brisker derech don't know halacha lemaisa. So he said, okay, let me ask you a shaila. I can remember this. I saw this a long time ago. Let me ask you a shaila and see, you know, you're a paisek, you know, you're a bucky and you're a Rideya. How would you paskin? And the shaila is the following. The shaila is that they were cooking meat, a kosher meat, and the mishareses, the non-Jewish maid, was cooking a piece of meat, and one piece of her treif meat fell into the kosher pot of meat, and then the whole thing was nishpach on the floor, and we don't know if they're shishim or not shishim. If there's shishim, the meat's going to be mutter. If there's not shishim, all the meat's going to be usher. We don't know if it's shishim or not shishim. So is the meat usher or is the meat mutter? Right? Everyone got the shaila. In other words, it's nishbach and there's a suffix if there was shishim. So the Rav answered quite confidently, this is a beferisha halacha in Yerideya. Because we have a chiluk between a taruvos of min b'mino, such as nevela b'shchuta, where they both have the same, they're both beef, cow meat, and min b'she'eno mino. By min b'she'eno mino, you need shishim diaraisa. So if you're mesupik, if they're shishim, it's a suffek yisr diaraisa, and you have to be machmer. But min b'mino, min atayre is batel, chad betray, and therefore the need for shishim is only drabanan. So if you don't know if they're shishim, it's a suffek drabanan lakula. This is in the mechaber. Memela, the Rav answered very pashut. Of course, any paisik, any person who's everyday knows the halacha, it's a suffek min b'mine. I'm sorry, in other words, it's min b'mine with a suffek shishim, suffek drabanan lakula. Ah. So Rav Chaim says, is that your answer? He says, that's my answer. Befeirish mechaber. So Zakt Rav Chaim, but lechaira, if the mishareses is cooking treifa meat, the meat wasn't salted. So in addition to the isser nevela, there's also an isser dam. When dam goes into meat, it's min b'she'eno minai, not just min b'minai. E bazai, you need shishim diaraisa, so it's a suffek isser diaraisa. Right? So the Rav says, you're right. If it's not salted, it's dam, Bibasar, Safek Yisr Diyaraisa, Avada, everything's Usr. So Rav Chaim said, is that your answer? He says, that's my answer. He says, but what about the fact that it's Dam Shebishlei? When Dam is Bishlei, it's only an Isr Derabbanan. So Mimanavshach. On the Nevela, it's Min B'minei. And on the Dam, it's Dam Shebishlei. So even though you need Shishim, it's only a Derabbanan. So Mimanavshach, it's an Isr Derabbanan. So you're back to the Mechaber's Din. Right? So the Rav is beginning to get a little nervous. The Rav says, yeah, you're right, Taka. It's Dam Shebishlei, it's an Isha Drabbanan. Is that your answer? He says, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Rav Chaim said, well, wait a second. Dam Shebishlai is only a drabanan on the Isser Dam. But the Dam of a Nevela has an Isser Nevela, but since the Tam is Meshuna from the meat, it is called Min B'Sheino Minai, and the Mela Lagabe, the Isser of Dam of Nevela, it's an Isser Diaraisa, and you need Shisha Minatara. He says, yeah. So Rav Chaim said, actually, this went on a few more steps. I don't remember all the steps. But Rav Chaim says, that's how we learn halacha in Bris Mishnas. You know, he says that, you know, people make a mistake when they kind of say, oh, Ian and Amkus is, you know, not psak. Real psak is miyusid on the Amkus of the sugya. It's not like, you know, the Amkun doesn't know halacha. Right? And that's what Rav Chaim is saying. Rav Chaim is saying, you want a paskin? It's not just memorizing what the Shulchan Aruch says. And even this, and you see, by the way, Rav Chaim is not even using, I mean, this is an important thing too, people mistake. Rav Chaim is not even using lumdus here. Rav Chaim is using just a deep awareness of what's going on, just to see the Klarkite. It's not lumdus, it's not a chakir, it's not a yeshivish chakirah, but just to see. That's an amazing thing, just to see the Metzius as it is, to be Magdur the Gedarim properly. You know? And people would say that, another famous Maase with Rav Chaim, people would say, why are you always Mechalek between this and this and this? If the Gemara says something, just go with what the Gemara says. Why do you have to create Chakiris? So Rav Chaim said like this. Rav Chaim said, you know, when you make a Shever Brachas, and you have to have Panim Chadashas, so what happens if you don't have any new guests? What happens? So the person says, well, we can make Asher Bara, or we don't have different shitas, but we can't make a whole Sheva Brachas. So Rav Chaim says, why don't you take a clay pot and put it in the Kivshan for half an hour, and then you could say Sheva Brachas. He says, what's the Sheikhas? Because the Gemara says in Zavachim, a lashon, that when you're machzer a kli cheres liyesh, panim chadashes bo lakan. What's Rav Chaim trying? Rav Chaim is trying to say, you can't build yesaidais just because of verbal similarities. The Gemara in Kesuvos talks about panim chadashes for sheva brachas. And the Gemara in Zavachim talks about kashering kli cheres by putting it in a kivshan aish, and it uses the same words, panim chadashas. You don't make gezeira shavas. In order to apply sugyas, you have to understand the yesaidais behind it. That's what Chaim's point. Chaim's point is, you can't just say, oh, the Gemara's lashon is the same here. You can have the identical wording in two sugyas, but you know, it makes as much sense as saying, I kashered the pots, so I can use it for panim chadashas, right? That's what he was saying. All right, so that was Rav Chaim's derech. Everything sounds great. I mean, you see the beauty of this. You see the amkus of this, the hashpa of this. But Volozhin had its problems before it was closed, and the essential problem of Volozhin was this: Volozhin had extreme faith in B'nai Torah. It basically had the Shita, bring these very smart guys in, give them the best Rosh Hashivas that you can possibly have in the world, and they will just steig, and they will just grow, and they will become G'daylim, G'daylim, G'daylim. There was no real Musag of a Mashkiach in Volozhin, and there was no real Musag of a Musar Shmuz and the like, or working on Midas and the like. And what happened, therefore, was a paradox, a little bit of a contradiction. On one side, Volozhin was miyusid to be a fight against the Haskalah. On the other side, it also became a hotbed of Haskalah, because all of these geniuses are sitting around, and, you know, they could finish the Masechta in 2 hours a day, whatever it would be. And, you know, they got into politics, they got into political Zionism, etc., some secular movements. Volozhin produced its share of both Gedalim and people who became very, very brilliant but went off the derech, Rav Chaim Nachman Bialik. who is considered to be in Israel really the greatest modern Jewish poet, was a Talmud of Voloshin. Now, Bialik was an interesting person. Bialik became non-religious, but he still had a tremendous affection for Voloshin. And in fact, he even wrote, he has a famous book that's used in many places, an anthology of Agadita, written in modern Hebrew, or actually not modern Hebrew, whatever, the Hebrew that was modern when he wrote it in the beginning of the 20th century, organized topically. Now again, a typical Beis Medrash will not have it, but it's a very interesting concept. So for example, he'll have, Eretz Yisrael, Torah, Gemilas Chesed, and he'll bring together different Mamari Chazal from the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Midrashim, organized and written in Hebrew instead of Aramaic, whatever it is. And, you know, people could learn Agadita that way. It's called Sefer Agada. It's even translated in English. But on the front piece of Sefer, he had a co-author too, a guy, Revnitsky. So on the front page of it, they have a picture of Bialik and this other guy, like, going through Gemaras to be Malacha. They're sitting there without a yarmulke. I mean, you know, they're sitting there, you know, looking at the Mishnah, Gemara, etc., whatever. So, and many people were like Bialik and the like. The other thing, too, is that even if it's not a question of going off the derech, on some level, there was a certain, you might call, arrogance among the guys. There was a certain kind of beetle towards Balabatim. I mean, in truth, this still exists in the yeshiva world in some ways. And there was even kind of a chutzpah towards the Rosh Yeshiva. The Talmidim of Voloshin, at least some of them, had no hesitation to go on strike if they didn't like what the yeshiva did. There were times if the Netziv hired a Magid Shir that the guys didn't like, the guys didn't show up for morning Seder. Or they would sit in the Beis Medrash and they would, apparently there was something called a hissing ceremony. They would do, you know, whatever. I mean, things that you would think are totally unbelievable. This is brought down in the Makor Baruch. It's brought down, and Rav Meir Bar Ilan brings it down too. His Zichronus, he remembers. And this gave the Netziv a great deal of heartbreak. And the Netziv even felt that the closing of the yeshiva was a einish min hashamayim for this type of behavior, as it were. You know, so there were many different, there were different types of problems and different types of issues that were arising. Now, this idea of a certain, now again, you have to remember, Rav Chaim Voloshiner's notion of a yeshiva was to give B'nai Torah a certain pride in what they were doing, that they shouldn't be regarded as beggars or schnorrers or batlanim. They should have a chashivas. The community should look at them as chashiv, and they should consider themselves chashiv, because if you think you're just like a schlepper and a batlan, you're not going to have the kayach to want to shout. But sometimes it went to an extreme where there was a certain element of gaiva and azus in the behavior of the Talmidim, which resulted sometimes in things like strikes. Now, just to give you an example of the Netziv's kind of tolerant personality, Bialik was once involved in a major strike as a bacher, so he was a troublemaker even then. And the Netziv was very angry. The Netziv wanted to kick them all out. But the Netziv said, but you know, and they wrote signs and laid sonnets, Pashkevilim. The Netziv said, but you know, the Hebrew is very beautiful. He says, you know, the Lashon is very good. He says, even though it was a lot of chasviyah.
Did they have any shmuzin as we understand it nowadays in Poland?
Not too much.
Not even by Shalshavis or something.
Well, it would be Dvar Torah. If you look at the Netziv, for example, you look at the Netziv in the Hamik Dover, right? So the Netziv, you know, Netziv has Mahalchim in Chumash, which of course he would say, but it wasn't Musar as we know it. In fact, Voloshin was against Musar. I mean, Rav Yisrael Salanter began the teaching of Musar when Voloshin was still around, and Musar did not make inroads in Voloshin. Both the Netziv and Rav Chaim, in particular, and the Brisker Rebbe also was not a chassid of Musar, had a shita that Limud HaTorah alone, and we're going to talk about this, Be'arichos, Limud HaTorah alone is Miyashir Midas. Lemaisa, you see, that didn't always work. But, therefore they weren't into Musar. But Lemaisa, many of the Gedolim of the next generation saw in the Mapala of Elazar, they saw a bit of a message about the Mechitzas of Musar and Yiras Shemayim in addition to learning. So that was a little bit of the chisaron in Volozhin. They tell a maisa there that a bunch of Talmidim wanted to start a newspaper in Volozhin about current events in politics, and they wanted to call it Habayker Or, the morning, the light of the morning. So the Netziv called them in, and the Netziv says, you know, we have a pasuk in Bereishis by Yaakov, and yeah, Habayker Or v'Hanashim Shulachim. So he says, if you want Habayker Or, there's going to be Hanashim Shulachim. He said, yeah.
What was the daily schedule like? People went to daven nets?
No. Volozhin was not a Vasikan place. I believe the davening of Volozhin was like 7:30, kind of like here. And they davened in the yeshiva, but those who didn't, again, Volozhin, but now, I can't give you numbers. I mean, Avada, Ruba de Ruba of the Talmidim were Yari Shemayim, but you know, I can tell you, not everybody came to Shacharitz. I mean, it was very freewheeling. I mean, you understand the concept. The whole concept was that they trusted the guys. You know, we're not here to watch you. We're not here to be sure you show up on time. You know, we trust you, you know, that we have confidence in you. But there's a certain chisaron, you know, what happens
in
that.
Was that also, or was mostly Bachrim?
Mostly Bachrim. Volozhin, it was never more than 500 Talmidim, which was, in Europe, a very large yeshiva. It was a large yeshiva.
Even with the last one, even with Chaim writing with Nafsh Chaim, how they still lack Musar with the yeshiva's built on that.
Well, it is a good yeshiva. Certainly, Yechidim, were always Isaac and Musar. I mean, that's always the case. I mean, listen, Sifrei Musar are very old. Chai v'Solovavish, Shari Tshuva. Sifrei Musar are from the time of the Rishayim. Right? It wasn't invented by Rav Yisrael Salanter, but in the yeshiva itself, as part of the Sidrei HaYeshiva.
That started from Reb Chaim, or that started with the Netziv?
It actually started from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim gave Shmuzim. In fact, we have one, besides the Nefesh HaChaim, we have one specific drusha. If you look at the end of a lot of Nefesh HaChaims or Ruach HaChaims, we have a drusha, famous drusha of the Maharach, drusha of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, that he gave the first night of Slichas, which is recorded as a famous long drusha that he gave. On the other hand, that's the only one. I don't know if he did it all every time. And as Volozhin grew bigger, there was more of a netiya to each person finds his own makam. Some people went to Rav Chaim, some people went to the Netziv, some people were in Musar, some people weren't. There was a concept, each person should find his own derech, v'sein chalkeinu b'sarasecha. So there wasn't, this is a problem that yeshivas like Mir had for many, many years, even today. Although, Agnesen's Tzvi managed to be ma'achet in an amazing way. This is a problem in Lakewood for sure. In Lakewood, for sure, it's that way. As the yeshivas get bigger and bigger, and as the guys get older and older, there's kind of a notion, you know, we're not here to be a babysitting service, so to speak. But there's a downside, right? The downside is guys go off in all sorts of directions, which was happening in Volozhin. So, again, it's not for us to say, but some Gedolim have said that Volozhin got closed the right time. Meaning to say, it had reached its godless, it had accomplished the tremendous thing that it accomplished. It was mashrish taira for the next generation. But then there needed to be tikkunim and the like. And that was kind of the next generation of yeshiva. I'm sorry, someone had a... You want to say no?
The Brisk Mahalaf nowadays, do they learn Musar?
They don't, no.
Still
now? No. They're still against Musar. Now again, we'll talk about it, Zach. When I say against Musar, you have to understand what I mean. I don't mean to say, you know, you're not allowed to learn Shari Tshuva or Chai v'Solovavos. Of course, Ben Tara learns Musar, and it tries to be Masakin his Midas. What? Brisk is against being Masakin your Midas. You know, I mean, nobody's gonna say that. But it means that they didn't want to make it a major part of the yeshiva seder. They didn't want to have a lot of shmuzim. They didn't want to. They wanted the idea that tikkun hamidas is miyusad on limud hatzayra. The Chazon Ish was against Musar. Now, we'll talk about this. Of course, the Chazon Ish was also against yeshivas in many ways. That's a more general problem. They say b'shem the Chazon Ish. Actually, we have a lot of stiras in the Chazon Ish. On one hand, the Chazon Ish talked about, he once had a conversation with the Satmar Rebbe. Now, the Satmar Rebbe was, of course, I mean, he was the head of the Eidei Charedus for a short while, and Satmar was known as totally against Medina, totally against, you know, anything to do with the state of Israel. And he was once talking to the Chazon Ish, and he says, you know, the Rambam says, when you live in a corrupt makom tuma, you're mechuyev to run away to the harim and the midbar to get away from your seviva. So he said to the Chazon Ish, what do? We live in a makom tame. We live in a makom of so many averis. Where are the mountains and the forests that we run away to? And the Chazon Ish told him that the yeshivas hakdeishes are the mountains and the forests in which you have to run away to in order to protect yourself from society. These makaimas of Torah. This is what he said. This is what the Chazon Ish said. A beautiful statement and taich of the Rambam. That's one thing the Chazon Ish said. But another thing the Chazon Ish said was, he once said that to produce a gadol from a yeshiva is like planting a tree under a table. It's only going to go so high. That is, he said that sometimes the yeshiva of gadlus requires a certain freedom. Now, that's exactly what was going on in Vilazhin. But you see, freedom, right? This is the shaila we have. Freedom is the double-edged sword. Freedom creates the capacity for gadlus, and it creates the capacity for merida. Maybe gadlus in another shetta, so to speak. Regimentation creates a greater safety margin. Like everybody's good. But everybody's good, but nobody's great. You see, it's a hard balance. I mean, ask yourself, you know, put yourself in the position of a Rosh Yeshiva. Is the concept like, let everybody like learn what they want to learn, let them find their own derech, let them see what types of things, you know, they're good in, right? Or do you kind of say, this is what we do, and this is what everybody has to do, right? You understand the mavucha. The mavucha is that if you kind of create a very strong, stark system, you'll have fewer people going off the derech, but less godless at the extremes. Right? So the Chazon Ish said, on one hand, he considered the yeshivas hakdeishes to be where you have to go. On the other hand, he said, there's also kind of limits the potential of godless. So Volozhin opted for the freedom model. But there were certain hefseidim, there was certain sakonis in that type of procedure. Now, in the aftermath of Volozhin, a whole bunch of yeshivas kind of took over. Dor Hailech, V'dor Ba. Mir. Now, Mir, Lamaisa, is the second oldest yeshiva after Volozhin. Mir was founded around 1840, so it had been around, but Mir was a relatively small makam until Volozhin closed. In other words, all the yeshivas were not that big until Volozhin closed. Then they became very matzliach. Mir became a great yeshiva. Again, when I think about the numbers of Mir today, the numbers are not near what it is today. Yes, yes. Oh, so that's even earlier. Okay. So Mir is a very early. It's after Volozhin, but it's a very early yeshiva. But it was not a significant makom Torah till after Volozhin closed. That was then it got entered its golden age. What did they say, the joke about Mir? Some guy was wandering around Beis Yisrael and he was looking for Mir. So they said, just stand here. Mir will come to you. You know, just, anyway, so the thing is, Panovich, right, all of these yeshivas, but the greatest, well, maybe I'm it's a bias because my Rebbe comes from Slobodka, but what is usually considered to be, Tells, for example, but what is considered to be the greatest of the post-Volozhiner yeshivas was the yeshiva of Slobodka. Slobodka is actually a suburb of the Lithuanian city of Kovno. Right? They're separated by a bridge, a river, so Slobodka, Kovno. And Slobodka yeshiva was founded in the 1880s, right before, around less than 10 years before Volozhin was closed. It was founded by the very enigmatic figure, the great-grandfather of the Mir Rosh Yeshiva, and the namesake, Rav Nassan Tzvi Finkel, who we know as the altar of Slobodka. And the Elder of Slobodka was a very, very mysterious man. Very mysterious man. We know nothing about the first 35 years of his life. He kind of came out of nowhere. There's all sorts of rumors and stories as to what his past was. Some say he was a maskil himself, whatever it was. He was a yasam at a young age, and etc. But all of a sudden, starting in his mid-30s, he started establishing kailalim and yeshivas all over the place. And he became a tremendous kayach in Lithuania. And he always officially acted behind the scenes. He was not the Rosh Hashiva of Slobodka. He was not the Mashkiach of Slobodka. He, in fact, had no position at all in Slobodka. He was called the Alter, the old man of Slobodka. As it were. He didn't even live in Slobodka. A lot of the year he spent in Kelum. But he was the Kalach. In fact, he never even used first person. He would just say, in Slobodka, the yeshiva, you know, he would say, as if somebody else made the, he made all the rules. He says, you know, the rules of the yeshiva are we can't do this. You know, I mean the rules. I mean, any rule that was said was his rule. But it was always like it was somebody else did it. The Alter of Slobodka was actually a Talmud of Yisrael Salanter. So the emes is, the founding of the Slobodka yeshiva is actually mekusher with the idea of the Musar. And the Musar in turn became a big kayach in Europe after the closing of Volozhin. So what we're going to talk about next week is we'll talk about the hamshacha of the yeshivas, but how it connected to Musar and how this was a bit of a, designed to be a tikkun for some of the chesreinus that were perceived in Volozhin. And we'll talk about Yisrael Salanter, the Alter of Kelum, the Alter of Mvardik, the Alter of Slobodka, some other Talmidim as well. I just want to say that people felt the Talmidim of Slobodka looked at the Alter as if he was their father. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was once described what his relationship to the Alter was. He says, the Alter didn't teach me a lot of Torah, but he feels the Alter was like, what does a goy feel, what does a ger feel towards the Beis Din that enabled him to become Jewish? You know, your title, he says, the Alter was the Beis Din that made me a Yid. He says, that's what he felt. No. And my own Rosh Hashiva, Rav Ruderman Zatzal, who was a cousin of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, grew up in the house of the Alter and had an extremely close relationship with him. So we'll talk about that next week. But this is already the next generation. The Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka during this time was Rav Isser Zalman and Rosh Mordechai Epstein. And then later Slobodka divided into an Eretz Yisrael branch, which became Chevron. Just very interesting. Yeshivas Chevron, right? Now, the Yeshivas Chevron was originally in Chevron, as you might expect, right? What happened was, in the 1920s, there was a very awful Arab riot in which many Bachrim got killed. So Chevron moved to Yerushalayim, and now there are two branches in Geula and in Givat Mordechai. But Chevron was the Eretz Yisrael branch of Slobodka that was miyused during the Alter of Slobodka's lifetime. In fact, he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he was nifter in Eretz Yisrael. Now, in Bnei Barak, there is the Slobodka yeshiva. That is the post-Holocaust rebuilding of the yeshiva that remained in Europe that was destroyed, right? So when Chevron came here, it was the Eretz Yisrael branch of a Slobodka that was still in Europe. And after the war, that Slobodka in Europe rebuilt in Bnei Barak. So I don't think the two yeshivas are related anymore, but that's why they go by different names. Okay, so we'll see you next week.